This is an interview with Greg and Bev Zephyr. The interviewers are David Cohos and Dagmar Thorpe and Karen Northcott. Testing, 1, 2, 3, testing, 1, 2, 3.
Not supposed to, is it?
You know, I was just wondering because I couldn't see out of my glass.
Maybe it'd be better if you sat down.
Why?
If for one thing, you'd be right in the middle of the breeze.
Well, that's fade.
No, I was thinking, say, you two guys.
Why don't you start that line of that question that you were just saying, because that was real good, you know, when you became involved in AMY and all that.
Okay.
So you returned to the Yankton Reservation in 1971.
Right.
And when did you get involved in the American Indian Movement?
Really involved?
When did you first become acquainted with the American Indian? When did you first hear the American Indian movement?
About 1970.
Yeah.
Or even maybe before that too.
Where were you then?
Probably in Yankton.
And what did you hear about it?
Well, I just heard about the American Indian Movement, you know, and the organization that was trying to that was fighting for the rights, you know.
And you were interested in that?
Yeah.
You heard about that? And why?
Well, you know, like I said before, we try to rent a house somewhere, call up the landlord, and say, well, yeah, you can come over and look at it. You know. So we go over and saw we were Indian, you know. Then they'd give us that line, you know, well, I just rented it, you know. It was, I forgot to tell you, you know, that was called before you did.
Did you experience discrimination in things other than housing because of your Indian?
Yeah. You know, in cafes and stuff like that, you know, people seem like they didn't want to serve you, you know. Unless you were with another white person, then they didn't have any trouble. But a lot of times, you know, they just wouldn't pay any attention to you.
No. Now, Yankton Reservation is in the eastern part of Science Park.
Right.
Right. Why did you go all the way from there to Custer on February 6th?
Well, I heard about this Wesley Ballard getting stabbed by this white guy. And they were calling for people to come out, you know. I don't even think they mentioned anything about a protest or anything like that. They just wanted people out here, you know.
Well, what exactly did you hear about this?
Well, what I heard was that they had this guy, they had a fight, I guess, in a bar in Buffalo Gap. And the Indian guy got stabbed by this white guy. And I think they charged him with second degree manslaughter or something like that.
Do you remember how you heard about this?
I think I might have read it in a paper or something.
That you might.
Oh yeah. We used to have meetings on the reservation. That's the way it was. And then we heard about this, you know. So we discussed it, and we thought, you know, we figured we'd send some people out there. Where we wanted to go, you know.
Why did people want to go out there? Why were they so concerned about this?
Because this. See, before that, this guy in Gordon was killed, you know, tortured and all that, and nothing was done about that, you know. And we had the same problem on our reservation, you know, Indians get killed on the highways, you know, and that's it, you know.
So
nobody does anything.
So it had been the experience of the people, yourself and other people there, that Indians would be killed and nothing, by
right.
White people, and nothing would be
right.
Done? And so it was not just this one incident that you were concerned
no.
about, it was a whole...
Well, there's a lot of things that happened on our reservation, you know, that people were concerned about. And, we figured that we'd come out here, you know, and show support out here, you know. Sometimes we might need support on our reservation or somewhere else, you know.
Was it your experience that, and has it been that there's a different, the police treat Indian people and white people differently?
Oh, yeah. Sure.
How?
Oh, hell, you go down on just about any town, you know, where Indian people are living. That's all you see in jail, you know. They're out sweeping the streets. And see, before I moved back to the reservation, when I was living in Yankton, we started the Indian Center there. And that's one of the things that we were concerned about, is our Indian people being thrown in jail. And their name was always in the paper, you know. Every time an Indian got thrown in jail for being drunk or disorderly or something like that, that would always be in the paper, you know. But then there was one incident where four young white boys took a police car, took it down towards the dam, you know, and they turned it over and they burnt it up. And their fathers, you know, like doctors and, you know, lawyers and stuff like that. You know, they never done nothing to them guys.
So you saw that white people would not be punished to the same
right.
degree. What about the court system?
Well, this is what we decided down there at Yankton, is that we would have people down there in the courtroom every day, you know, to check on who all was in there, you know, in court, and make sure that their names got in the paper too, you know, not only the Indians.
When did you start that monitoring system in the courts?
Well, that was when we started that Indian Center down there.
Which was when?
About 1967.
So this kind of thing was a problem well before the Wesley Gadhart
Bowl. Right.
Did you help set up that Indian Center?
Yeah.
Down in Hampton? And what other reasons was the Indian Center set up for?
Well, the primary reason was to help help Indians, you know, whatever problems they had. The Indian Center was set up there to help them. And one of the things that we really got involved in was this Thomas Whitehawk, you know, when he was supposed to get executed. And he kind of spearheaded that, so he got a hold of Red Ball, and my dad was instrumental in setting that thing up.
Can you describe a little bit about Thomas Whitehawk and what happened and what people attempted to do?
Well, see, what the deal was, he was sentenced to die in the electric chair, and there wasn't, and at the last one that was executed in South Dakota was about 20 years prior to 1968, and he was the last one, and then they didn't execute anybody until, you know, Whitehawk.
So, was he executed?
No. We got that stopped. My dad, you know, talked to the governor and wrote letters, and he got answers, you know, from the governor. And there was, about that time, you know, they were changing. I think Bull was governor then, and then they changed over to Farrar. But we didn't want to see Whitehawk go to the chair, you know, so we worked pretty hard. We had meetings down at the radio station, the WNX. We set up a committee, you know, at the Thomas Whitehawk defense. Then we got it started there, and then shifted up to Sioux Falls to, can't remember the, some preacher, Episcopal preacher that was able to go in and talk to Whitehawk. There was about, I don't know, a couple other preachers. One lived in Vermilion. I can't remember the names, but they were pretty involved in this thing.
So what? One of the primary reasons that Indian Center was set up then was the part of this Thomas Whitehawk defense?
Well, we had it going before that, but when you heard about this, then
the
everything just switched, you know, to Whitehawk.
What does your... When you said your father was involved in this, does he have any position on the reservation, or either traditional or...
Well, he's a spiritual leader now on the reservation. You know. It's, you know, mostly my family, you know, that were really involved in this. And of course, you know, the people were behind it too, you know.
Did he go to Custer?
February 6th? Yeah.
You know about what time you got to, to Rapid City?
Got to Rapid City? Gee. When did we get here?
Was it the night before?
It could have been.
That's what I think your dad testified to last year, that you went over to a brother of yours who lived here the night before.
Cousin.
Cousin.
Nephew, yeah.
And you went to the Mother Butler Center on the 6th?
6th, yeah.
And what happened when you got there?
Well, when we got there, the cars were all lined up, and they were getting ready to leave. I don't even remember what time that was. But they were all lined up, and when they started leaving, well, we just, you know, got in the caravan.
You know, there were a lot of cars there with out-of-state plates. Is it unusual that Indian people would come from all over the country to protest something like this?
No.
How come?
Well, the Indian's Indian, you know, and there's a problem there, and they see it, and they're going to come.
And It wasn't outside agitators.
No. The Indian couldn't be an outsider in this country. No way.
Did you observe any police following or coming to the caravan?
Yeah, they were stationed all along the highway coming down that way.
Have any idea how many police cars you might have seen?
No, we just look, we see pigs, you know what I mean?
More than a usual number?
Oh, yeah. I mean, they were hanging around the Mother Butler or something.
Is it unusual for Indian people who are concerned with, protecting their human and treaty rights to be followed by cops as policemen?
Is it what now? Is it unusual?
Yeah, for people who are active in Indian civil rights and treaty rights to be followed by police.
It's not unusual. Well, they follow you all over if they know you, you know.
And do you have any idea what time you arrived in Custer?
Oh, I really don't. But all I know is when we got there, when we got out of the car, people were in front of the courthouse. We started to walk across the street, and then somebody hollered, said that we'd have to wait for about another 45 minutes or so.
Do you know it was the Indian person or white?
Yeah, it was the Indian. It was the Indian that said it. I don't even know who it was.
Do you remember whether it was in English or Lakota?
No, it was in English.
Yeah. So what did you do there?
Well, we went back to our car, and then I don't know when we got a potato chip out at the station. I don't know, that on the west side there. And we sat in the car and visited for a while.
What was the mood of the crowd, the people? Did you happen to notice?
Well, from what I could see, it was that they were just waiting to, you know, go in and listen to what was going on inside there.
Did you notice any Indian people with any clubs or weapons of any
no.
kind?
No, I didn't see anybody with a club or weapon.
And so you were sitting in your car, and was there a reason why you got out, or did something happen?
Well, see, we sat in the car. And we sat in the car. Well, there was nobody out there in the front that I could remember, because everybody just kind of left the place and waited for that 45 minutes that they mentioned, you know. And then pretty quick, somebody come around there and hollered again.
They're going in.
Yeah, going in. They said so. We got out.
What did they say?
They're going in now.
Do you know who it was who hollered there?
No.
It was an Indian person?
Yeah. Yeah. That's what we thought, you know, that we were going to get to go in and listen, you know, to what was going on the inside there.
So did people get out and go to
Yeah. Them? By the time we, you know, got out of our cars and started going over there, well, it was a pretty good crowd there by then.
What happened then?
Well, that's when we seen, that woman, Sarah Badhart, was up there, and she was arguing with that cop.
I tell you what, why don't we get each of you's point of view?
Listen, when we started walking across there, that woman went up there.
Do you remember it differently, Beverly?
Right.
Because people,
know,
if you do, what did you see that happened?
I don't know. I know when you got out of the car, you're going in.
Is it okay?
Well, I'm going to. Oh, sure.
Well,
Everly, what?
Everybody start running fast. Then the pigs came out and asked Sarah, and then I don't know what she's saying, but they did.
So you say that something happened before Sarah Badhart Bowl went up there on the steps? What was that?
Well, that's when we thought we were going to go in.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, we were all at the door. We thought we were going to go in, you know, and sit and listen to what they had to say to us.
And what happened?
And I don't know what happened. That's when everything broke loose. A window busted there. And then everybody, I just kind of got scared or something. They were pushing us back.
So you got pushed down the steps then?
Yeah, there was an old white cop standing there, and I remember a woman handing me her. She said, could you hold this for me? She had a shawl and a blanket. So he was just standing there holding it.
I remember that, but I can't. I remember that part of it.
And then when they pushed us, when we were out down where those, what do you call them, trees, those little trees when they're standing there.
Shrubs.
Yeah, then I heard sound like gunfire, you know, and I got real scared. And I was holding his arm, and I was saying, let's go, you know, because I was really scared. And then that's when everybody rushing around, and things start coming out of that courthouse. And I guess they were gas bombs, and then they start throwing them back.
And this is all...
Before that happened, though, that's when they ate Sarah, and
I remember that, but you're probably right, because when we come, when they start pushing people back, I can't. See, everything happened so damn fast. But the way I remember it was that we were standing over here, and then
we've
seen that over, along the shrubs, what she's talking about. About halfway, I think, between the front of the steps and the street. I think we were about right in there. And this is the way I remember it, is that Sarah went up there and she was saying something to that. Well, there was more than one pig standing there. They were arguing, saying something to each other, and then all of a sudden one of those pigs hit her with a club. And she went out of sight. And that's when things started happening, the way I remember it. Because that's when you said, well, they're starting to shoot. You said they're firing. So then I was gonna go up there, but then you grabbed me. The ones on deck grabbed me and started dragging me. And then that's when you guys took me across, you know. We started to go across the street, and then we seen all the pigs coming down this way.
Then we just stopped there and turned around.
That's when that one hollered.
From where?
Oh.
They come from the back of the courthouse down this way.
Like around the court, around the outside of the courthouse?
Yeah, they come on like from the back, and then they come down at the sidewalk on the west side of the courthouse. That's when that one hollered. He said, kill as many fucking Indians as you can, while you can, you know. They all had these...
With the high-powered rifles?
Yeah, they had, you know, great big guns.
How was this guy dressed who said that? Was he wearing a uniform?
Yeah, red jacket.
Did you hear
all of them were on it. Mm-hmm. All of them ones that come from the back, and then the ones in the front were red.
Greg, can I borrow your car to go to the airport?
I remember that old man.
No, any of the people there?
No.
Did you hear any of the conversation that Sarah Baharbo had with the...
No. We were too far.
Too far in the back here. Did you see her grab or hit or in any way attack the any of the police?
No. All I seen was they were arguing there, you know. But I don't even know if they were arguing. So we were after, went after all these pigs come on this way. And we went back. We didn't get in the car yet, did we?
Mm-hmm.
As we look back, you know, that's when we seen those things coming out of the courthouse.
The flames?
The bombs, the gas. Yeah.
Where were you when you were watching this? Were you over towards your car?
Close to our car by then.
Close to, that was by the mobile station?
Yeah.
And what did you do then?
Well, we just got in the car because my dad was... already sitting in the car, and when these guys, you know, when we heard that guy call her about kill as many fucking Indians as you can, well, then I start thinking about my bird, my dad, you know, my sister, all her kids were there, you know. So then we got in the car and we followed them.
Did you think that was a real possibility that they would try to kill us?
I think that's one of the reasons why we left, because shit, nobody wants to be killed, you know, and we didn't go there to fight or, you know,
anything
like that.
Did you see any Indians there with weapons or clubs at any time?
All I seen was... When those gas bombs come out of the courthouse, then someone pick one up and throw it back.
And let's see. Do you remember what the weather was like that day?
It's pretty damn cold, I guess.
So that if people were standing outside, they would have been uncomfortable in the cold. Did you know of any regulations as to the number of people who could get into the courthouse?
I can't relate. I really can't.
Did you expect when you went there that you would have to stand out in the steps?
No. I thought they would let us in. No.
And you never heard anybody tell you that you'd have to wait outside and that only a certain number could get in at a time?
No. I think if we knew that, well, we probably wouldn't have went.
Did you see any? Let's see.
Why was it important for people outside to be able to get inside?
Well, they wanted to hear what was going on.
I did, I know.
I wanted to hear. You know, why this guy was on the charge of, you know, second degree manslaughter. I mean, you know, he stabbed this guy. I know if that happened to me, if I'd have stabbed somebody, some white guy, they would be no second degree manslaughter, I know that.
So the reaction of people who were forced to wait outside, you know, and who couldn't either voice the way they were feeling and couldn't hear what was going on, like, did that create, what did that, you know, how did that make people feel outside?
Well, there's a lot of people.
Did there appear to be anybody in the crowd of the Indians who was a leader, who was directing things, who was telling people what to do?
No, there's nobody. Nobody that I know. They must have, because I didn't see them. See any of them. The only guns I saw were the ones that the guys in red suits had. The red tops, red jackets.
Can you explain more like what it, like every day is a good day to die? Can you?
Well, see, the way the situation has been over the, ever since Columbus has been there, you know, that the Indians have been slaughtered, you know. And Indian people are being killed every day. What it means to me is that be prepared to die because the white men don't give a shit who you are. They don't give a shit. If it's an old man, woman, or child, they'll kill them. They proved that at Wounded Knee, at 1890. They've always done that at Sand Creek.
Are those memories, or are those in the minds of Indian people? Indian people remember Wounded Knee, Sand Creek? Do they, in the culture, is that sort of thing discussed? People?
No, not really.
But it's in the back of your mind?
See, it, we don't discuss that stuff. What we do is, like in our ceremonies, we just pray. Pray to the spirits for the people that were massacred. Ask them for guidance, stuff like that. We don't sit around and say, killed all these people, so we're going to turn around and kill all the white people. That's not the way we look at things.
Yeah, when he talked to the white people in Iowa, I remember he had them all crying. Maybe like that. I mean, if you could explain it like that.
Well, he gave this mayor of this town pipe and then told him to smoke it. He said, we're all brothers. To try to hurt you, and we don't want you to hurt us, because we were all created by the same God, whether you're Christian or whether you're not. The Indian people value life, more than they do like property, because you can look out here out in these hills, even out here, you know, everything that moves out there has got life. Even the rocks have life. And that's what the Indians value, is life. You know, everything is sacred because it moves. You look at them trees out there, they move. You can see that. If they didn't have life, it wouldn't be moving, you know. You take that road out there. That road ain't gonna move by itself. That road that's built there, that street, that ain't gonna move by itself. But it will move, you know, if the earth underneath it moves. The earth moves all the time. The only way that the human can cause things to move is by destroying the, you know, like this house here. The only way you can move this house is tear it down, you know. The only way you can build a street like that is to tear up the creation, the grass, tear up the soil. But everything that was put here for us to use is sacred, even rocks. They have life too. This is what we believe.
It's just like when white men first came, Indians did, you know, like when they value life so much, they didn't kill the white man, they had some kind of a stick, and they would all run up and hit, touch that white man with it and run away. They wouldn't kill him then. And that's why I think, you know, a lot of the Indians feel now that, you know, they couldn't kill a white man.
See, when the Indians went out, you know, even to kill a deer or a rabbit or anything, you know, they prayed first. Then after they made their kill and took it back, then they took part of that and offered it, you know, to the Great Spirit. Like they do today, you know, they just go out just to get those horns, you know. But that's not what they've done, you know, for the white man. They pray first. Then they kill a buffalo or whatever. And they, you know, they don't let it waste. They call Indians gut eaters, you know, because they eat everything. This is everyday life. It's not just on Sunday or Easter or Christmas or anything like that. This is every day. They offer food every meal, you know. We do that at home. Then and we'd go out on the hill. Take my pipe, we'd go up on the hill, you know, pray with the pipe, and then we'd take the food and bury it.
Something else that we might try to talk about, and I'm not sure how to bring it out, but that the way the Indian culture views other Indian people, not just family, you know, like my wife loves one, there's no caring between one another, and there's no love as a people. In addition to that, it's not unusual for people from other out of state to come and protest this, but it's, you know, the love for one another and for all people. And I'm not sure how to, you know, the kind of question that to bring that out, but that it, you know, that it's a concern for everyone as a living
creation.
Yeah, and maybe, I know, maybe through what we just said, what Greg just said about, you know, nature. So if we could think of a question that would bring that more to the fore.
That was a question, right?
Well, white folks, you know, like, maybe they care about their blood brother, you know, like my brother Bob. But if something happened to my brother Bob, the woman across the street probably wouldn't care. But, and it, you know, it wouldn't matter. And if that's just some, you know, something that happened to some poor schmuck. But, you know, Indian people care not only about their own family.
Put in the question.
I don't know what the question is.
Just is that the same way in Indian? Indians feel the same way, or is there a different feeling about that?
Is there a term, all my relations, in Indian culture? What does that mean?
That means that you're praying for everybody, you know, because the way the Indian feels is that, you know, we're created by one being, you know, mystery.
Patel.
Getting away.
Patel. Come on, Maggie.
And so we're all related. It really doesn't make any difference if you're white, black, yellow, or red. You know, that's where the four colors come from.
Yeah.
Is that creation of the four races. And, you know, when we pray with the pipe, you know, we don't only pray for just, you know, whoever's sitting there. We pray for everybody.
We pray for the four races.
And, you know, we pray that, you know, everybody understand, you know, what our problem is, you know, what we have to go through every day. And maybe think a little bit, you know.
Would there be any reason, though, why you might be more concerned about the death of an Indian person than a white or a black or a yellow person?
Well, today I think there's a lot of reason why we would be concerned, you know, about the Indian. Because you know, it's written. It's in the books.
Oh! I beat babies on my sideline. You don't even hear them smashing your head against the
neck. You know, like myself, and I think there's a lot of people that feel that way, is that if people come to me and say, look, I know what your problem is, you know, how can I help? Well, the guy or the person is willing to help, you know, then you say, well, you know, he's a nice person, you know. He's my friend, you know. And if something should happen to that person, I feel, and I think a lot of other Indians feel that they would consider him the non-Indian as, you know, one of us.
Yeah.
because, you know, there's people that understand and there's people that don't. They don't even understand their own, you know. And that's the way I feel.
But I guess what I'm worried that they're going to say is, why would you be why would you want this white man to get even more heavy charges against him for killing an Indian? I mean, if you were, this is what they're going to say, if you were concerned about everybody, why would Indian people go long ways to try to get more charges against a white man?
Because the white man, it's the white man's law that we're going by now. You know, it's not the Indian's law. And the white man's law says that when you kill somebody, you know, you're supposed to, execute them or hang them or put them in prison for life. I mean, you know, the laws are made by the white man now. And if their law says, you know, when you kill somebody, then we put you in prison for life, or we sentence you to death, and it's murder, you know. No matter how you look at it, it's murder. And if that law says, you know, that they're going to put me in jail for killing somebody, some white man or some Indian, then they should do that to the white man that killed an Indian or another white man.
You did?
So when you're, see, that's the question right there that comes in my mind, you know, what kind of a law is it?
So, we went over this before, but it's been your experience that Indian people and white people get treated differently by the law and by the police.
Well, the reason I see, you know, the difference in treatment is because the law belongs to them. They made the laws. They made their own laws, and they're still making them, you know. So naturally, it's not, their laws are not going to protect us, you know. Even though our laws protected them when they first came over here. And our laws were simple, you know, we didn't have stack of paper that high, you know, saying these are the laws, you know. I mean, it's just...
What are you doing?
Just passed on, you know, over the centuries.
How did Indian people...
kill, you know, you're not supposed to take a life. Can't kill anything without it, you know.
What would be the punishment in Indian culture for one person who killed another person?
They send them away, they ban them, you know, they send people out, runners out, and say, okay, this is a bad man, he just killed somebody, and we don't want him. So they kick him out, they ban.
Always sometimes if you kill someone, you ask that family to do with him what's going on, you know, and sometimes they would accept. You would have to take
the hardest
place
thing.
Of the, yeah.
You have to do what? Take care of
the
family?
Place, yeah, place of the one that he killed.
So that was kind of left up to the family.
Yeah.
Like the biggest punishment was that they say, okay, you know, you killed him, so now, you know, you're like the father and mother would say, no, you're my son, you know, you're taking his place now. So. Well, the guy's got that guilty feeling, you know, about him and his these people, you know, and they don't really do anything to him but accept him as a son or a brother. And then they tell him, you know, this is how my son here, you killed him, this is how he lived, this is how he believed, you know, these are the things that he liked. So you're taking his place, so then you do these things. So that was the worst punishment that probably that anybody could have.
Do you know
song, you know, is used for all kinds of reasons with this. Because, see, when there's a death, you know, like when my little boy was died, you know, and then we had a traditional funeral, and then we used the AIM song.
Mm-hmm.
There. It's kind of a victory song, I suppose. That's what you would call it. It doesn't mean that, you know, you won a battle or anything like that, but like, you know, when my son died, it meant that he won the battle of life, I suppose, and was taken, you know. Taken to, you know, to the Great Spirit. Couldn't really say it was a death song either, you know, because I don't think that's what it is. But I know, you know, when we have a good meeting, at the end of a meeting, you know, it's real good, everybody's happy, well then you sing the AIM song. So that's what it means to me, you know. It's not
brings the Indian spirits up.
Why are they trying to say it's a war song, a battle song? Or?
Well, no, they have a lot of footage of you know, just people singing the AIM song, and we just wanted to explain what it meant and how often it's used and how it's meant to. How it means different things at different times to different people, you know, some as an honoring kind of thing, or, you know, one of the things we want to do, you know, is also try to educate people